Welcome to the Tavern, the Take Cook Warriors podcast. I'm Roy Gim, a.k.a. the Old Tavern Owner. Welcome to our 2016 end of the year Tavern podcast. We haven't done one in a while. I'm very psyched that you're with us from wherever the world you're listening and tuning into. First off, let's go to Tavern Studio Jeju-do. And there's our resident longtime contributor, JT. Welcome aboard.
Hey.
How, first of all, quick question.
Yeah.
Have you turned actually into a Jeju United supporter and have forgotten or foregone your support for Busan iPark?
Oh, no. I'm just a Jeju fan, I guess. But no, okay. I still, for the other site, I still cover Busan and I track them more closely than Jeju.
Okay.
But Jeju's fun to watch.
Yeah, and I have surprised everybody. And we'll get to Jeju later on in our podcast. I'm glad you're joining us. And from a completely other side of the world, Tavern Studio Quebec, we have Tim Lee, another longtime contributor. How are you, man?
I'm good, you?
Awesome. I'm copacetic here. I'm in my in-laws in Tavern Studio Denver, so we've moved the Tavern Studio a little bit, so I'm not in the physical tavern, but it's okay, and there's no snow here, but, you know, we're doing all right. I've stayed out of trouble with the in-laws, so that's good. Life is good. And any snow any snow in Quebec?
Yes, obviously. It's cold. It's freezing cold.
It's Canada. All right.
That's right.
Let's go to our last our last Tavern contributor and writer who's joining us for the evening from Tavern Studio Connecticut, I think.
Ohio.
Unless I'm – or Ohio. Ohio. Tavern Studio Ohio is Jinsung Yang. How are you?
Very good. And seems like you're doing well too, so all good.
Yeah. Super. Everybody looking forward to 2017, I hope.
Absolutely.
All right. Hey, let's get to it. Thanks again for joining us. A lot to talk about with 2016. We have seen the highs and lows of Korean football all in one year. It was really amazing. I sort of want to start with, if everybody's okay with this, the Korean national team, as I think that's probably the thing that gels us all together in the Korean diaspora. And one of the big events was sort of the hybrid U23 plus three overage players participating in the Olympics in Rio. Korea was, it's bittersweet. Bittersweet because it wasn't all bad. It wasn't all good. There was some brilliant moments and incredible disappointment. First, I know, Jinsuk, you've had probably the most emotional reaction to the Olympics. I do want to hear from everybody. Everybody's laughing because we know Jinsuk seemed to take his entire life. You know, we were reading his entire lifespan on Twitter. Take us through your thoughts about the Olympics. There's so much writing. You know, most teams going into the Olympics, Argentina, what have you, very little stakes. Korea, not so. Because they had military exemption on the line, as everybody who knows about Korean football knows how important these tournaments are for Korean footballers and being able to unfetter their careers. I want to hear from everybody, but I want to hear from first Jinsung.
Well, I guess since you guys realized that I went on a huge Twitter rampage back when that happened, I'll start, I guess. I mean, I think a general opinion is we did well, we played well-ish, and then we just went Korea mode against Honduras, and then everything fell apart from there. That sums it up pretty well.
But I guess you were surprised, since we had done really well. Mexico won the whole gold medal against Brazil. Neymar was part of that 2012 lineup. Mexico won the whole thing, And Korea, after having done really well, relatively, we won the first Olympic gold medal in 2012. A whole generation, Ki Sung-young, Ku Jae-chol, Ji Dong-won, all these guys had military exemption thanks to some brilliant play throughout the tournament and beating Japan spectacularly. This tournament, you know, again, had its highs and lows. We beat Mexico in group stage.
Yes, but
we almost beat Germany, a powerhouse, a football powerhouse. You know what? And then we just demolished Fiji. I mean, I think when going into Honduras, I think very few people were doubting that Korea could go all the way to at least getting a bronze again.
Well, yes. I mean, the Honduran team wasn't very strong. I mean, like on paper, right? It was, and actually, to be honest, I think the strongest team on paper that we faced against was Germany. And that game was actually...
Who eventually went on to the title match. Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, exactly. That was the game that really brought the optimism, especially against Mexico. I mean, they were a very weaker side compared to the team that won the gold medal back in 2012. They didn't have a lot of their good players. Some players had red cards and injuries. So we definitely benefited from that, and we barely won 1-0. But I think the biggest downer is Honduras, right? Like, you don't think of Honduras as a football powerhouse. It's a little bit of the Algeria effect, except it's a little more enraging that Jorge Luis Pinto knew exactly what to do against Korea, and all the fans knew exactly what was going to happen.
The Shin Tae-young was too transparent, you would say. I mean, and let's go to the other contributors. Was his tactic too naive?
I'm not sure that it was as much Shin Tae-young as what Honduras was doing. It seems to be a very classic blueprint. Well, it is a classic blueprint to play against Korea. It's the defend, counterattack, and get one in the second half, and then make Korea run around like headless chickens for the rest of the game. It works. And so as for Shin Tae-young's tactics, I think that the side was very... In the squad selection, it was very top-heavy in terms of offense, with a lot of firepower in the team. Yeah. So yes, there is that frustration that we even though Honduras parked the bus, we still cannot get through them despite all of our offensive forces, right? You know, Hwang In-chan was on fire, as Son Heung-min, you know, and Sakyeon Jun, who came in later in the game as well with his aerial presence. But yeah, I think Jin Suk touched on it. It's a very Korean thing to do, to lose against a kind of side that sits back, defends, and counterattacks. And it's a frustrating thing that hopefully we'll see fixed in the future, but it just seems to be Jin Suk's skeptical. I guess it's a bit of optimism here.
I think, as much as I can see... Yeah, I can see that. But at the same time, I can't help. And I don't want to dwell too much on the quarterfinal with Honduras. But I just can't help to think that, Korea was unlucky. Had they were able to have been more clinical with a very dominant first half performance, that they would have been able – there was a completely different result.
Luck definitely played into it. I mean, every time Korea plays like this, right, it's a lot of luck. We never finish our chances. It's just how Korea is.
But that's soccer, right? Like sometimes you can't put it in the back of the net, and that's one of those days. And we can reminisce about it, or moan about it all we want.
I'm sure Team Great Britain from 2012 is still reminiscing about it.
Exactly. So
But let's talk about the bright moments, because there's still a lot. I think that Korea could still be able to. Take away positives from, and that's where I'm going to go to you, Jay. I think we all agree that there were some positives that Korea can take away from this. Let's open it up to anyone about this, and then we can move on to the rest of the senior national team.
Well, I guess the main positive is the fact that Korea can play a dynamic offensive line, kind of game. This was a very refreshing turn of events compared to what we were seeing from Hong Myung-bo, Choi Kang-hee, Steele-kae, even Cho Kang-rae, really. Shin Tae-young's very... I mean, he has the firepower up front. He has the players. He has the system. But he plays a very different way from other Korean teams. That, okay, it wasn't the most refreshing, because I'm going to save that for later, but it was the second most refreshing thing I've seen in 2016, or since the Dark Ages, really, since 2010.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to touch on that as well, it's gonna be interesting to see what Shin Tae-young is able to do with the U20 side. Since we're in the national team segment, that's also a team who recently appointed a manager with a big tournament coming up, the U20 World Cup next year in Korea. It'll be interesting to see as well if Shin Tae-young can really double down on his reputation of being this kind of offensive-minded tactician, especially with the... Well, he's got the squad to do it, right? With Lee Seung-woo as well.
Yeah.
Going to be featuring in that tournament for sure. Yeah. And so, yeah, so I guess for me, the positive out of the Olympics was exactly that, was the offensive movement, was how dynamic the team was, and how we were able to... We were knocked down time and time again by Germany, but we came back even stronger. It sucks to have conceded at the end, but to think that we were on the verge of beating the German U23 side, right?
Yeah.
That's an incredible feeling. I think we have to...
it was a stacked
as KNT fans, we knock ourselves down a lot and focus on the negatives. Well, this is a big positive. We need to not underestimate the effect of this.
And had they been more clinical, if they were more clinical, it would have been four goals instead of three.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, sure,
The numbers, when you look at the stats, look impressive, at least in the group stage, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, and a quick aside, Shin Tae-young taking over for the U20. Jay, you were able to report that Shin Tae-young's U20 played some exhibition games against Busan. Do you have anything more other than what you reported on Twitter about those particular results?
Not really. I mean, they were, unfortunately for me, they actually were played here in Jeju, but they were kind of like little closed-door practice things, I think, for the most part.
Sure. Okay.
I don't know if I would pull a whole lot from those two matches, because basically, I mean, Busan obviously is in their off-season. They didn't really bring too many of the players that featured for most of the challenge season last year, and the first game that they played, Busan went a little stronger, while Shin Tae-young went very weak, I guess, not the usual U20 side that people are used to. And then the second game they flipped, and Shin Tae-young went a lot more the normal players that we see for the U20, and Busan went very experimental with a lot of trial players, and the results kind of followed. Busan won the first game easily, and then the U20 side won the second game.
One image that's left in my mind is Sun Heung-min was arguing with the refs and just inconsolable, crying, and this would fortunately not be the end of Sun Heung-min or his career. We'll get to more on that later. But Sun Heung-min is one of the linchpins of Stilike's senior Korean national team squad. And that team has had quite a roller coaster of a season in terms of World Cup qualification and so forth. So in a nutshell, how do you guys react to Stilike? Because I think we can all agree his time with the KNT came awfully close to being terminated.
I mean, I think for people who have been following since Stilike took over, I think the team has broadly performed to what I would consider expectations.
Yeah.
I think the defensive streak that went through in the earlier rounds of qualifying was probably just more down to the fact that the quality of the opposition was so much lower. And so, I don't know. I mean, I don't feel like there's anything really different about this team now. It's just that as we'll talk about later, the KPAs have, you know, dropped out of form and aren't playing as much. And we all know, as we'll, I'm sure, talk about later, the lack of quality within the K-League these days. And so, I mean, to see that the team has struggled is not hugely surprising against, you know, some of the better Asian teams.
are we seeing then sort of like, and we've discussed at lengths in previous podcasts and within the Tavern's own writings, musing about the systemic problems. Like you say, the K-League, the quality, the lack of being able to find quality, you know, center backs. Hong Jong-ho moving, transferring from Augsburg, top flight German football, to the Chinese Super League, where, you know, these things are not new, and you wonder, are we seeing sort of a slow decline of the Korean national team, or is there something that can really be able to put the puzzle piece into play so that we have a more potent team?
I think it's a couple things. I think it's a little bit that other nations are improving and catching up, and Korea's kind of not necessarily regressing, but we're kind of stagnating.
Okay.
Maybe the K-League is dropping a little bit in quality in terms of the Korean player production and the KPAs that we used to rely on are struggling at the moment. And so if there's sort of a normalization, I think Korea would still be one of the best teams in Asia and competitive against other nations around the world. But it's just kind of a couple factors that are, I think, just leading to what we see. And again, that goes to more systemic issues in terms of how, you know, the K-League clubs are managed, bringing youth players through, and, you know, coaching, training at the youth levels and so on, that need to adjust and to meet the changing environment in the game. I think I mentioned it before. I don't know if it holds up completely, but if people want a bigger kind of similar situation, I would say it compares slightly to the situation with Italy and Serie A and the Italian national team.
Yeah,
I think there's some parallels there.
Well, some bright spots, though, to counteract what you say. I mean, and again, I am in complete agreement with the assessment that you're bringing about. It's a sobering assessment that maybe perhaps we're seeing a plateauing of things. But I do see, you know, Hwang Hee-chan as one of a couple of bright spots that could reinvigorate the Korean national team and bring a whole new sort of dynamic or dimension to reconfiguring the offense, perhaps, along with Song Heung-min, who I think has rediscovered his form for the most part.
Well, the thing is, like, it's not just Hwang Hee-chan who can reinvigorate the K-League. It's so many different great young players. Korea always does incredibly well in youth tournaments, U17, U20, up to that level. Mm-hmm. And then we just cannot translate anything to the senior level. It's been going on for the past, like, 10 years. So it's not just Hwang Hee-chan, it's more of a systemic failure on that part.
Perhaps, and then we've talked about this too at length, about the problems of bringing the youth into playing, getting those vital professional minutes. Since the last time we talked, is there any sort of positive, you know, inching or movement in that direction? There must be people within the KFA, people within the Korean football community, professional and otherwise, who recognize this problem and are trying to address this head on.
Well, in theory, that's the idea behind the reintroduction of the R-League.
That's right.
To be a place for, you know, the U23 level players to play with a club team against other professional U23 players. But unfortunately, the league doesn't put out a whole lot in terms of statistics from the R-League, but my guess is that just watching from what I saw from kind of tracking Busan's R-League team is that most of them are, again, those like 22, 23-year-olds who have graduated university from the U-League.
Yeah.
And so it's not really that gap that we really need, like the 19-year-olds, the 20-year-olds that are still a little bit lost.
Right. We need those guys to be playing against full professionals, not in an R-League. I mean, the R-League is definitely a step in the right direction, just so like, it would be really nice if there was something better.
And I'm wondering if that U19, U20 gap where you know, players aren't really getting the minutes and aren't really developing at the level that they should be. I'm wondering if that was reflected at the U19 AFC Championship earlier this year when Anik Su's team just did terribly and wasn't able to get past the group stage. So I'm wondering if that was solely Anik Su's tactics and his more, you know, traditional, if you want, style of play, or if that was also combined with the fact that a lot of players on his team were kind of out of form.
I think that the introduction of Chung Chae-young alone shows you that it's an Onyx's problem. Right? That alone should be evidence that it's not the players who are out of form, because they played very well afterwards.
That's right. It's interesting what a manager can bring to be able to reconfigure the sides and get better results. Now, I guess this is one of those things that they'll continue. We're going to continue to have to monitor and see if the R League is definitely a step in the right direction, as people have mentioned. I want to see more. I want to see Jungkook being able to put in 17, 18 year old players. I know that there's, you know, systemic Korean laws that may need to be loosened up, but you know, something's got to change, and we've been talking about this for quite some time, and I think this is where we're at. We just have to continue to see if there's momentum in this way, because definitely people know that this is a problem, at least some people.
Right, so go ahead.
Well, I mean, do people recognize it's a problem? I'm sure people within the football world realize it is. But, I mean, there's a broader, again, cultural, societal issue about, you know, the acceptableness of, you know, being a professional athlete and not going to university and, you know, talk about the 16, 17-year-olds that, you know, we're good enough that instead of, you know, going U-League, that go, you know, go pro. And is it okay for them to play, you know, third-tier Korean football for a couple years to get experience and then to go pro and to be pro right away? Or is that something that they can, you know, Korea can get past as a country?
Yeah.
I wonder out loud, when Korean youth kids see the likes of Lee Sung-woo coming back to playing a youth tournament, he's a, you know, high profile, that they're encouraged maybe to take that risk and go into Europe and trying to go all out and develop themselves outside of the Korean system. I mean, I just don't know which is the better. I don't know which is the better route.
I think Lee Sung-woo is a special case. I don't think that people young Korean players should say, oh, look at Lee Sung-woo, he got developed at Barca, we can do that too.
Yeah. I think it's unrealistic, perhaps.
Long-term benefit would be, of course, for Korean football to adjust and modernize and invest more in youth training and youth development. And so Korea as a whole can develop just better youth players that way. But, I mean, that's kind of a wish for the future.
I was just going to say, like, I don't know why KFA stopped funding the most promising youth players abroad to, like, different places in Europe, because what really worked is that Lee Sung-woo, Chang Kyo-ri, and Baek Sung-ho, they grew up in a European system. You have to go there from the start. It's really hard to start and, like, adjust when you're, like, an 18 or 17-year-old. So, like, well, in Korea, if you start out as a Korean in the K-League, you get more attention and you probably get more profile, right? Because there's more, like, you can stand out more in the K-League. But if they're really good, it's definitely better for them to go abroad and start when they're young in the Spanish system or the German system, what have you.
And I guess I know that these kinds of structural decisions don't come from the national team manager. But when Ulrich Schilicke became manager of the current national team, this is something he talked a lot about how we needed to revamp and to modernize the the structural problems, the structure of the youth systems of young Korean footballers, so that they could finally be able to keep up and not have their progress lost after 19, 20, 21 years old. And obviously, we haven't seen any of that. And we've even seen Štětina, after the Iran game, I believe, blame the youth system for the loss. And it just feels like we've got a manager who seems to have some ideas about how to revamp the youth system, but either no power or no influence, or both. So I guess there's a frustration there, although I'm not blaming Štětina for it, but this is something he did want to bring in. And so there's a frustration there, I guess.
I guess I'm going to, ask one more question about the KNT, and then we're going to move on. And I'll ask, and anybody can chime in.
We need to transition.
Štětina got a good result with the last World Cup qualifier against Uzbekistan. Is Korea going to be able to qualify again? We're still sort of in this quasi. Will we or won't we be able to qualify? And should we do it with a new manager?
I mean, I feel like as bad as we are, our opposition is also pretty bad. So I think we will qualify. I highly doubt they're going to fire Štětina, unless he loses a ton.
Yeah, it feels like...
Go ahead.
Okay, after. Yeah. But it feels like... I believe the next games are in March. It feels like that. Okay, start over. It feels like every game right now could potentially be Štětina's last. I mean, if for example he loses against Syria or China, then everyone's going to freak out and call for his head. So I think the public's patience is up, as well as the KFA's patience is up with Štětina. We need to get some results and we need to qualify. But I think that a loss against a key opponent at a inopportune time, and I think that we could actually see him sacked, although it's not my preference. I think that public pressure seems to have some sort of influence in these things.
I think we qualify, but I think we probably don't do particularly well at the World Cup, and then mm-hmm. I think Štětina is out, and they starts again.
Shinter,
got it.
Starts all over again.
4 years, and we come back to the drawing board. Yay!
So this sounds like purgatory. a Buddhism meets Catholicism purgatory kind of thing. All right, so listen, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to discuss many other interesting events, including Son Heung-min's red-hot start right after his disappointing exit from the Olympics, listening to the Tavern of the Take It Warrior podcast.